Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and
Cassie. It is just me today on this episode of Cassie and. I started what I guess is now a tradition with my first season, where I ended that season with me as a guest, partially because I just wanted to get it done. And I thought that's kind of a nice way, maybe going forward, to close out a season. I do run my podcast in 20 episode seasons, just to give me some sense of structure. So anyway, last season, season one, I talked about how I've used AI and machine learning in my own practice as an e-discovery attorney. And this year, I think it makes sense to talk about an element of AI that has been a bit of a specter over all of us here in 2024. And that, without a doubt, is the EU AI Act. We've been talking about it many times in my episodes with various people. I've also been guests on other pet podcasts or webinars talking about the EU AI Act. And last Friday, the EU AI Act was finally published in the official journal of the European Union, making it official and kicking off the timeline for the effective date of the EU AI Act. For someone listening who, and you know, maybe in a few weeks, last Friday, that was July 12th. And that means 20 days from that, the first triggering event will start to happen. It will start to go in effect on August 1st, 2024. And then there will be a series of benchmarks, a phase type of rollout over, they say, a two-year period, but it's really a three-year period. And there's other dates as we go. There's a February 2nd, 2025, an August 2nd, 2025, August 2nd, 2026, and then August 2nd, 2027. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but I feel like a month in these days of emerging technologies and the news cycle, it feels like a year. So 3 years down the road, it'll be pretty remarkable to think about what will be accomplished between now and then. Let's talk about those deadlines a little bit. The big ones are the 2026 and the 2027. Now, in theory, all of the AI systems should be compliant with the EU AI Act by August 2nd, 2026. And there is a carve out. One category of high risk AI systems does get an extra year. And those are AI systems that are also beholden to other legislative frameworks already existent with the EU. And that extra year is to give time, in essence, to harmonize the EU AI Act with those previously existing pieces of legislation. And they cover products and services, manufacture of toys, some medical devices, things like that. And for anyone who maybe hasn't paid a close attention to the EU AI Act, it is really framed up from a perspective categories of risk. And dependent upon what category of risk an AI system falls under will dictate what sort of obligations may come into play. And it's not like only EU countries are required to be compliant with this act. It's if that AI system effects could potentially harm citizens or people in the EU. And really, the concept of risk here in the context of the EU AI Act, it's really focused on harms of to individuals, whether it's certain unalienable rights or human rights, risk of discrimination, things like that. It's really from that posture, not focused like you might see in risk discussions and maybe ISO-related frameworks, or maybe even NIST frameworks, which might be more focused on risk to a company, an unknown event that could occur. So that's something that's worth keeping in mind. The most stringent category of risk is unacceptable risk. And the EU AI Act is drawing a line in the sand and saying, if you have an AI system that is one of these enumerated types of AI that we've identified as unacceptable, you may not be able to use it. Now, there are some exceptions. Law enforcement has some exceptions. And we may see that there are some very strict interpretations to some of those categories. But it will be very interesting to see how some of those categories get further defined by the EU AI Office. The EU AI Office was set up this year to be able to administer the EU AI Act. And the office officially opened mid-June, and they're in a bit of a hiring spree. If you're listening to this somewhat recent to the publication, I really encourage you to check out the EU AI Office's website, and they offer links and where you can go sign up to get alerts of jobs. And I saw recently that they're hiring for head of their robotics and AI focus group. So something to keep an eye on. Now, there's one category of unacceptable risk that has caught my attention from the very, very, very beginning. And it is, and the reason why is because I don't feel like it's defined very well. And that unacceptable risk category that I'm talking about is all AI systems that deploy subliminal techniques beyond a person's consciousness or is purposefully manipulative or executes with deceptive techniques. Now, they do give a little bit more context in the recitals, the whereas section, and they give an example. This could include virtual reality systems because of their ability to have a higher degree of control over stimuli in that environment. Now, that's really all the guidance we have right now. And that could potentially cover a lot of tools. So I think that it will be very interesting to see how that category of unacceptable risk gets defined over time. Because from my perspective, it's really hard to pin down. There's just not a lot of information there. So maybe we'll know more in a few months. It'll be great and interesting to see how all of that ends up rolling out. Now, there are also high-risk AI systems. And unlike unacceptable risk, where they're saying it's a done deal, you're not going to be able to have these anymore, but for some exceptions, the EU AI Act says these are high-risk systems. Yes, they can be used, but because of the potential risk associated with them, you're going to have some additional requirements to develop and maybe even deploy these AI systems. And there are some categories here that, again, I find interesting in that it could be fairly broad sweeping. One is any AI system tied to critical infrastructure. So that could be digital infrastructure that's related to road traffic or the supply of water, gas, heating, or electricity. I know I'm in Texas. I live in Texas. The power grid management is always, it's received a little bit of attention lately. And I think this is a fairly potentially broad category of high risk. And some of the obligations there that come into these high risk systems, you're going to have to do a risk management system type of operational compliance program. And that's for the life cycle of the product. And that's something the EU AI Office has talked about. These obligations aren't a one and done. It's meant to be in place for the life cycle of that AI system. There's also an expectation and a requirement of transparency in disclosing the fact that that AI system is in use. And there's also going to be requirements related to quality management systems, you know, making sure that there are sufficient validation systems in place and testing, and then documentation as well. The episode that I had with myself in season one, you may recall that I've used AI machine learning, you know, for a while in litigation. It's adversarial. You have to kind of back yourself up, your work product. And in essence, what I'm seeing in the EU AI Act for these high-risk systems that have these additional requirements, it's not unlike some of the work that me and my colleagues have had to do in e-discovery, where you have to document your process. You may have to disclose some elements of that process to the other side, depending on certain factors. You have to document that process for the whole life cycle of using that AI tool for that specific matter. And you, in essence, have to have a defensibility tracking mechanism to be able to show, I use this tool and I used it. With great power, it's great responsibility. If I'm going to use this tool to create efficiencies in some way, and arguably could be more accurate than human, I still need to make sure there are mechanisms in place to ensure that it is maybe more accurate than a human, or it's behaving the way it's expected to behave. For I see in the future, the growth for AI governance, the growth for AI compliance, because these systems that are going to have these risk management systems in place, quality management systems in place, they're not just the trendy generative AI tools out there. There are things like I just mentioned, critical infrastructure related AI systems or AI systems related to education or vocational training or AI systems related to hiring decisions. And we've already seen hints of that in U.S. law. We see, you know, the New York City Local Law 144 came into effect last year, which required if you are an employer hiring people in New York City and you are using an AI system or automated system to make final decisions related to employment, whether it's who you're going to recruit or maybe how you will treat your existing employees, you're going to have to do a bias audit and validate the fact that that system isn't biased. Haven't seen the actual effect, like how that is being enforced in New York City, but that is one area of scrutiny. We've also seen EEOC go after companies who have used AI systems, and there have been claims of discriminatory results. And the EEOC has said, hey, we're coming after you if we think there's discrimination of a protected class. So doesn't matter if it's a human doing it or an AI system doing it, we're keeping an eye out for that. So the point I want to make is there are many AI systems out there that have been in use for a while, and they may now have this AI compliance, AI governance structure that they may have to, you know, adhere to. And the bigger thing, too, is it's not just the EU AI Act. While in the United States, we don't have a federal act that is far progressed as or near to completion as the EU AI Act, there are a lot of states that have passed or are working to pass laws about various areas of regulation and legislation. And one that's gotten a lot of attention, Colorado, earlier this year, I believe in May, they passed their Colorado AI Act. And maybe taking the lead from EU AI Act, it's focused on high-risk systems. So that act does not go into effect until 2026, but that one's out there. And then Utah recently passed a law, the Utah AI Policy Act. Now, that one's a little bit different. It is focused specifically on generative AI systems, and it's for the protection of consumers in Utah. And the focus is, hey, if you're using a generative AI tool to engage with consumers, there's an obligation of transparency. You have to disclose that. Now, when you have to disclose is going to depend on the type of business you are. Do you run a business, and is that system being used in a use or in a business that a license is required? If so, you're going to have to proactively upfront right out of the gate give that notice that this is a generative AI based tool. Now, other systems, if you don't fall under that category, it may not come into play until that person, a consumer, asks about it. So now this one is a little bit different. It's more narrow than Colorado, but it was passed in March and it went into effect in May. So that's just one example of an AI act that actually is enforced. Let's pause and let's think. If you are in a compliance department, you're working in compliance, or you're an attorney working in-house, or you're an attorney who advises clients in those roles, something you can do this year is conduct an AI mapping exercise. So we're borrowing the phrase mapping from, of course, data mapping, something that really became a bit popular or needed after the GDPR passed. I don't even remember how long ago that was, maybe eight or so years. But to think about it, if you have to be compliant with the law about data, you have to know what data you have to know how you have to comply with it. So similarly here, to know not just with the EU AI Act, but with the growing litany of AI-related regulations and legislation that's getting passed, what AI systems do you even have in place? Now, I can tell you from my experience conducting custodial interviews for e-discovery, it is not uncommon for the IT department to have in their head, these are the data sources we have. Our employees don't really use anything else. This is it. This is our suite of data sources. And then when you have one-on-one custodial interviews, you, of course, refer to that as your starting point, but then you also keep it open-ended. Are there other data sources? Do you use other collaboration tools? Do you use third-party applications? And it's not uncommon that people are using more than the IT department may realize. And no one's doing anything nefarious. People are just maybe using tools that they think are appropriate. Now, I would say, you know, the safest thing to do because of data security issues is any tool that's being used, in particular, anything AI related where you don't know the flow of that data, there needs to be a security assessment done by your IT department, compliance department, legal department, whoever has ownership of that. But let's get back to the focus, AI mapping. So we're at a stage where we know the EU AI Act is going into effect, but we don't really know how it's going to be enforced. And there are still things admitted by the EU AI office that they still need to define for us. So it's not unreasonable for a company to say, I don't want to spend money on getting a compliance program started for AI if I don't even know what the compliance requirements really are to operationalize it. That's a complete valid point. But in 2024, you could at least, with internal resources, start building out a list of all of the AI tools you have in place and tracking key pieces of information about them that will be germane to determining whether or not that AI system has some sort of compliance deadline or obligation. And using that, you know, you can look at the EU AI Act to see, hey, these are the categories of risk and these are the examples they gave. Look at some of the other acts. And that's a really great starting point. Just get your house in order, get organized. And then you can start thinking, is this AI system core to our business? Does it heavily feed into the success of our business? And if so, is it in any of these high-risk categories? And if so, we might need to set aside budget for 2025 on building out a compliance program. Now, not every company will have those kinds of systems that may elevate to that level, but you don't know until you get these things mapped out. So that would be one big piece of advice I would have for any company out there. Now, if you are hearing some chatter in the background, that is my dog, Zuzu, and she wholeheartedly agrees with me. So I want to close the last 10 minutes or so here, and maybe it won't even be a full 10 minutes. And just generative AI has gotten a lot of attention, but it's just the beginning, folks. And there will inevitably be more game-changing technology that follows. This is the beginning of a big wave of change, I personally believe. So I know I personally have experienced hypervigilance, hyper fatigue, because the news cycle is so intense. And you have to learn, what do you really need to pay attention to? And I think it's really important just to know that, again, this wave of technological growth, I truly believe, will increase fairly quickly. And it won't be limited to generative AI apps. Those will probably become more integrated into existing systems. They may have true multimodal capabilities. But then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if robotics starts to become more consumer friendly in the coming years. Maybe not next year, maybe not in 2 years, but that's probably coming down the line. And because of the power of generative AI and the potential of generative AI tools to create environments, virtual environments. So now we're nearly talking about VR, to help train those robotic systems that can help improve their performance. And maybe we won't just have business-to-business robotics. So we won't have a computer, a robotic dog, you know, monitoring a facility. We may have a robotic assistant helping us get through our day at some point, like so many sci-fi films have fictionalized. So there's also, I really think, hologram technology is really exciting. I think that AR technology, augmented reality, is probably going to start maybe becoming more integrated into our daily lives. And I still hold out hope for Web3, that whole decentralized web type of structure, I think, is very interesting. What ends up being the next tech of hype, I don't know. My name is Cassie. I can't see the future like Cassandra could, or maybe I can, and I just don't realize it until after the fact. But that's where I see it going. And then talking about AI systems, I think there's a lot of concern related to data security, cybersecurity. And I hear chatter at events of, are we going to move away from the cloud back to on-prem? Will we have LLMs that are within, cloaked in, air-gapped into a controlled infrastructure so that data is protected? You have more control over that data. You know, I think these are things people are thinking about, or companies who are considering building out custom tools, they're thinking about. So I just think we have an interesting, exciting future ahead of us. Now, again, going back to what we started talking about, the EU AI Act, I really recommend, if it's something you're interested in, the EU AI office hosted their first webinar. Oh, I think it was the end of June, maybe, or maybe May. And it's recorded and you can go listen to it. Now, one thing that they talk about is they really drilled in and focused on a specific type of high-risk AI system. And that's the one that gets the extra time. That's the one that doesn't have its obligations come into effect until 2027. And that, is because those are AI systems that also have intersecting obligations with other pieces of legislation, many of which tend to be product related. And having that requirement, that need for harmonization between the different legislative schemas is very important and complicated too. So another thing they talked about is building out standards for the enforcement of the EU AI Act. And I think that we all, myself included, have talked about frameworks that have been published by other groups. NIST is one. They, of course, published the AI Risk Management Framework. ISO has published an AI management system type of framework. And one thing they talk about is we have to look at those frameworks that are already out there in commercial use and integrated, and we have to see how they line up. We have to normalize those standards with the standards that we're building out in the EU AI Act, and we have to identify those gaps, and we have to fill those gaps, in essence. There seem to be an acknowledgement from the EU AI office. There's a lot of work between now and enforcement to build out guidelines and build out more information for companies. How are you expected to actually implement these systems, risk management systems and quality management systems? So I would recommend keep an eye on the EU AI office website. And also LinkedIn is a great aggregator of information of people who are sharing phenomenal information about AI regulations, AI legislation, AI governance. And you don't have to recreate the wheel. Again, there's some really great information, materials out there. Go look at that and start getting a sense of what's out there. I would definitely say go look at the NIST materials. They published, of course, as I mentioned, the AI risk management framework that I believe in April, they published 4 more pieces of guidelines that supplement that risk management framework. And something they talk about, there's one specific set of guidelines for synthetic data or deepfakes. And that, of course, is going to be a completely huge issue that we deal with. And how we deal with it, that is going to be very interesting because there are a lot of challenges related to, do we manage that with watermarking? Do we manage it with metadata? How do we manage it? And how do we manage it in a way that a threat actor or a bad actor won't be able to circumvent? So these are some really challenging questions, but there are also a lot of really smart people out there. So I, for one, am really excited to see how we may start tackling some of these. The need for AI ethics, the need for AI safety discussions is, of course, very important. Again, as I said, great power comes great responsibility. And those people who may get hurt are the people who are more likely to be disenfranchised historically. So we really have to be paying attention to this and making sure those safety nets are in place without circumventing other rights, like First Amendment rights. So all in all, there are a lot of interesting legal issues coming into play because of AI. And without a doubt, the EU AI Act, even though it's passed and there's been a lot of attention to it, it will continue to have attention as we look to the EU AI office and get better, more defined guidelines from them, really on what those enforcement obligations are going to be. Here at the end, I would say, don't give up hope. Stay vigilant, but give yourself a break. You can't know everything about AI laws, AI regulations. There's just a lot out there. And just know that hopefully we'll get better guidance soon and we'll really start to see how the real life operational rollout of AI governance pursuant to the EU AI Act will actually occur. I, for one, am very excited about that future of what that will look like, but I always love tackling a new problem or a new challenge. So maybe it's the person who likes to solve the puzzles. So maybe it has to do with that. But I will say thank you so much here at the end for joining me this past second season of Cassie And. I've really enjoyed it. And I will have a season 3. So keep your eyes out for that. And I hope you've learned a lot. I know I've learned a lot from my audience. And for that, I thank you. And I hope you join us for the next episode of Cassie And.